Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Pimps, Hoes, and Tricks. Arguably society's longest running profit earning structure. Back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the pimp was looked up to by many young men and even many young women in the black community. The pimps had nice clothes, nice cars, and of course, a stable of attractive, sexy women. There are some who say that the pimp hoe trick structure has been duplicated by many in the business world, including corporate America. I remember reading an article where a well-known movie star once offered a pimp hoe trick analogy for the movie industry. He said the studio executives and Hollywood producers were the pimps, the actors and actresses were the hoes, and the men and women who pay for the movie tickets were the tricks. If you are a man, have you always wondered what characteristics it took to be a top-tier pimp? If you are a woman, have you always wondered what type of persuasive charisma that a pimp had to have in order to make dozens of women want to sell their bodies to please him? Why are many of us, particularly in the black community, so fascinated by pimps? Joining me tonight is a highly credentialed researcher and book author who spent a lot of time with his wife, Christina, examining the pimp and prostitute culture in the San Francisco area back in the 70s. The end result of their research and conversations with pimps and prostitutes was a very popular book entitled Black Players, The Secret World of Black Pimps, which sells for as high as $250 to $500 in some bookstores across the country. Popular dating and relationships guru Tariq Nasheed recently purchased the rights to the paperback version and plans on potentially making a movie or documentary out of the subject matter. Who is this intelligent gentleman looking to break down the game in a real but also academic and intellectual manner so we get a better understanding of how the pimp whole trick phenomenon first worked well for so many? His name is Richard Milner, and tonight Mr. Milner is going to share his wealth of knowledge and research with my listening audience about the secret world of pimps and players as he chooses to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my god, is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my god,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you,
do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in the race?
You do.
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do stupid.
I think it's a turn on, because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, mode one. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight, and the McClendon Report. Right now, you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
This is DJ Easy Dick. I'm gonna get involved right now. Something new by Snoop Doggy Dogg. And this one goes out to the ladies from all the guys. A big bow wow wow. Cause we're gonna make it a little mystery here tonight. This is DJ Easy Dick on the station that slaps you across your fat ass with a fat dick.
When I met you last night, baby, before you opened up your gap, I had a respect for your lady, but now I take it all back.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to calendar year 2011, Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, January 6th, as I said, 2011. So this is my first episode in the new year. That's right, the new calendar year. And I'm glad to have a lot of you join me. This episode that starts off this new year should be very, very, very interesting. I mean, it's going to be very, very interesting. Because if there's one thing that's been fascinating in the black community, particularly to a lot of brothers, is that of the pimp, the life of the pimp. And we have a gentleman tonight that wrote a book called Black Players, The Secret World of Black Pimps. And I know a lot of people have talked about that informally. You know, you hear a lot of guys call their buddies, hey man, what's up, pimp? But literally, there have been guys, as I think most of you know, that have not been a casual pimp or informal pimp or amateur pimp. But, I mean, that was like their career, their livelihood. Pimping was their livelihood. And it's always been intriguing to both genders. It's always been fascinating to both genders. And I can't wait to have this guy. Now, you would think a guy who wrote a book about black pimps would be maybe a former black pimp himself, but that's not the case. This guy is actually Caucasian. He's a historian, an academician, but he knows his stuff. Him and his wife, Christina, they've done extensive research in this area on the pimp prostitute culture. And the book, this book, the hardcover version of this book, sells on some sites for as high as like $500. No joke, $500. So you know it must be a wealth of knowledge in this book for it to sell for that high. And as I mentioned in the intro, Tariq Nasheed, I think a good number of my listeners are probably familiar with him. If you're not, he is a dating and relationships guru, attraction and seduction guru in the game, one of the few brothers. He's been on a number of high-profile TV shows. He actually recently bought the rights to the paperback version of Black Players, Secret World of Black Pimps. And I heard a rumor that he's possibly thinking about turning it into either a movie or a documentary. But yeah, this is going to be, I think, a very interesting discussion. I can't wait. I have to say, I've not read the book. I've just kind of browsed through clippings and reviews, and it seems like it's a very well-written book based on a lot of conversations that, again, my guest and his wife conducted, I want to say, in the 70s in the Bay Area. Iceberg Slim, who I've mentioned a few times on this show, he's one of the features pimps in the book. Matter of fact, I read where he initially had an adverse reaction to being featured in the book. But I actually own a couple books by Iceberg Slim. He breaks down the game. It's like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad to start a new year of interviews. 2011 is going to be happening. You know what was interesting? I actually met a woman of all things, about 5 years ago, who said when she was in college, she was a pimp. She wasn't like a, you know, true pimp, like had hoes on the street, but as I would call her, an informal pimp, or I guess the female equivalent would be a madam. So I guess she was more a madam. But yeah, there was this woman I met about 5 years ago, and we got to talking about different things. And she was telling me that it started out, she had a roommate and another female friend who owed her money. One owed her like $75. I think another owed her like $50. And they were slow at paying back her money. They actually didn't have it to pay back. They kept making excuses. So at first she was being nice about it. Then finally she got pissed off. So she told her roommate, she said, "Bitch," as you know, the joke is with pimps telling their hoes, "Bitch, you better have my money." That's basically what she told her roommate. She said, "Bitch, next week you better have my motherfucking money." For those of you who are my Disney Channel watching listeners, excuse my language, but that's what she told me. She told her roommate, she said, "Bitch, I want my fucking money." So the woman started crying and saying basically she didn't have the $75 to give her. So she said, "Well, I'm going to find a way to have you give me my money." And then the idea popped in her head to have her basically sleep with a guy for money, and that's the way she was going to get her money back. So without getting into details, this woman, again, that I met about 5 years ago, she told me that, yes, she had her roommate find a guy who was willing to pay her about $100 to sleep with her. What she did, she found some like semi-nerdy guy that was willing to pay $100 to sleep with her, and she took her $75, left her roommate with $25, and the other friend, she did the same thing with the other female friend, and over a period of weeks and months, she ended up, she said she had a stable of about 7 or 8 girls on the college campus that were basically her hoes. Yeah, she was running hoes. She was, again, I want to call her a pimpette, but again, I think the appropriate female title is a madam. She said she made some nice money. This was back in the 80s when she did this. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of people out here to one degree or another that have been pimping. Come on now. Be honest. Pimping. There's a lot of people that have had their own version of pimping. Maybe not, again, to the point where they were earning their livelihood from it. But I've had quite a few acquaintances that have been what I call informal pimps or casual pimps, including myself. I mean, keeping it real, I mean, I've in my day, look, somebody wrote in my chat room, so this female pimped out a roommate for $75. She emotionally scarred that individual. Now, I would have to disagree with you. You say she emotionally scarred that individual. That could have happened, but this, based on the story she told me, and I know just from my own experience, and I know women who are feminist types don't like to hear this. They don't like to hear this, but I'm going to keep it upfront and straightforward. There are some women that not only don't mind being pimped, but I would take it one or two steps further and say there are some women who are intrigued by the idea of being pimped. And I would even say there are some women who crave being pimped. So, yes, have there been some women who've been emotionally scarred by being pimped out? Surely, I'm sure they have. I'm sure that there's been a percentage of women that have. But there's been other women that have enthusiastically and voluntarily allowed themselves to be pimped. Let me give some shout-outs in the chat room. I got Hyper in the chat room, my most loyal listener like ever. I got my second most loyal listener ever in the chat room, and that would be Adrian, my good friend from Columbus. And Columbus, Ohio is getting a lot of juice right now because a guy is like the story of the moment from Columbus, a homeless guy who's in my business, radio. He used to be, I guess, a popular disc jockey or radio personality. Then he fell on some hard times due to his addiction to drugs and alcohol. But then he started, about two to three years ago, he started coming on a rebound. He gave up alcohol, gave up drugs, you know, turned his life over to the Lord. But he still was homeless and financially challenged. But he got discovered in Columbus by the Columbus Dispatch, and now he's just all over the news. His name is Ted Williams. Ted Williams has a great voice for radio, and he is a story. Yeah, he got discovered in Columbus, Ohio. Now he's got a job offer from the Cleveland Cavaliers, MTV, MSNBC, just all kinds of job offers pouring in for him. Man, I couldn't be happier for the brother. I could not be happier for this brother. It just shows, man, sometimes the Lord got to just break you down in order to raise you up. Break you down in order to raise you. He was broken down, man. He was broken down. And, yeah, and now he's been raised up and, you know, hey, great story. That's a great story to start off the new year with, start off 2011 with. It's just very, as Atlanta Boss said in the chat room, very inspirational. And speaking of Atlanta Boss, yeah, ATL Boss is in my chat room. Got Christian Davis in my chat room. I mentioned Adrian, a.k.a. Diva362636. I got Jesus number five in my chat room. I got London Lesner in my chat room. I got a number of guests in my chat room. Thank you for joining me. I can tell already this is going to be an interesting conversation. If you want to ask my guest questions tonight, you can call in to 646-478-5710. 646-478-5710. I will be right back after this intermission break. Don't go anywhere. I will. Well, first thing that got to happen is I got to find my intermission. Yeah, I got to find my intermission. Okay, here we go. But yeah, I'm gonna take a quick intermission break, and then I'm gonna come back and introduce my guest. Oh, wait a minute! I didn't mention. You know, I always got to mention something about sports. NFL playoffs are this weekend. My predictions. I might be wrong. Colts by three. Colts by three over the Jets. Philadelphia by three over the Packers. New Orleans by 28 points over Seattle. And who else is playing? Baltimore by, I'd say, 14 to 17 points over Kansas City. So
You can dog me next week if I'm wrong on those predictions, but those are my predictions. I'm predicting two close games, one major blowout, and one game that's kind of, you know, average margin of victory. So that's my predictions for NFL weekend. I will be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously, and you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous. Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Kanahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex abuse.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to the first episode in 2011 of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. Tonight's discussion is going to be with a distinguished gentleman, highly credentialed researcher, academic professional, author, anthropologist, performer. This guy has really some impressive accomplishments and achievements. He is an associate in the Division of Anthropology at the American Museum of Natural History. He has written books on Darwinism, evolution, paleo art, urban anthropology. He's performed a one-man musical called Charles Darwin live and in concert all over the world. He often appears on various TV programs such as the History Channel, Nova, Animal Planet, and he is a contributing editor at Natural History Magazine, and he's a voting member of the North American Book Reviewers Circle. But for relevance to this conversation, he is the author, along with his wife, of Black Players, The Secret World of Pimps. Yes, indeed, listening audience, on behalf of Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, listeners, give it up for Mr. Richard Milner. How are you this evening, Richard?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to borrow that machine that you have. You have the applause on. I want to put it next to my bed.
Hey, you're not supposed to say anything about a machine. That's my enthusiastic listeners, and I tell you.
Yeah, well, you can put them right next to the bed to cheer me every morning. That's a good sound. I like it. I appreciate the build-up and the introduction. It sounds like a whole room full of people. I'm
yeah, well, you know, I do. I have a number of people, in, along with I have just what I call regular listeners, but then more specifically, I have chat room listeners, and
yeah.
I have a number of them in the chat room ready to listen to this discussion about Black people. Matter of fact, if you don't mind, I'm going to quickly call out a few new names I see. Black Man 37 is in my chat room. Brandon Petrillo is in my chat room. A number of guests are in my chat room. James C. Jimmy is in my chat room. And MZ Buff is in my chat room. Angel Eyes is in my chat room. Richard, what first provoked you and or your wife to start doing research on this most interesting subject?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I'll try to make it short. We were graduate students in anthropology at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley, and it was a wonderfully strange time in the Bay Area. It was the 60s, and all hell was breaking loose in so many ways. There were these topless clubs all over North Beach, San Francisco. And by a combination of circumstances, I actually went there to cover a story. I took my wife, and she started dancing, and they offered her a job, to our amazement. And we were sort of broke graduate students. She took the job, and it was a topless place. And so that was her weekend gig, and she came home and she said, well, this is the strangest place. She said, these guys come up to me and they tell me that they've got 5 and 6 women working for them and I should be working for them. And they talk this strange lingo. What kind of lingo? Oh, hey, you a bad bitch. What you doing up there shaking your ass for chump change when you could be making plenty, plenty, plenty bucks with a player like me and so on? She said, what is this? What is this player? What is this stable? What is this stuff about? She said, the end of the night, they come, they pick up their money from their women, then they go out and they pick up the other ones that are on a stroll. I said, well, this is fascinating. Also, she thought dangerous, so she wanted me to hang around. And then something occurred to me, which was, to both of us, which was that a lot of the anthropologists, young anthropologists, were going out all over the world. They were going to New Guinea. They were going to Africa, staying in little villages, claiming that they learned to speak these exotic languages. And meanwhile, the whole Black Power thing was starting out in Berkeley and the Bay Area. The Black Panthers were coming up. all this stuff was going on, and there was this secret world of pimps and hoes. And talk about white academics, they knew nothing of it. It was a secret world. Now it's kind of interesting because that world and its language emerged as hip-hop. And for the last 20 or 30 years or more, it's emerged to the point where white kids in the ghetto, I mean white kids in the suburbs, had adopted the ways and the music and the language of the ghetto. I had in the back of Black Players a dictionary of hustling slang. It's probably the first place in written English that the word ho appears, H-O.
Huh.
And that was listed in the Time magazine, I think was the first place that it appeared. And so I wrote a whole dictionary of bitches and hoes and chump change and all of that sort of thing. And it was fascinating. It was another culture. It was another world. I'm looking back at my dictionary today. Everybody knows the words that are in my dictionary now. You know.
But you're saying back then those were fairly new terms.
Well, to the white middle class, they were new terms. They've been old terms in the black culture. They go back to the zoot suiters. They go back to the, you know, the 30s and the 40s. This thing didn't happen yesterday. In fact, some pimps will tell you that the pimps are the second oldest profession. If prostitutes are the first, then pimps are the second.
I would probably agree with that.
Yeah. So we took this as if we were entering a foreign culture, which in fact we were, and tried to get people's confidence to talk with us. And of course, everybody was very suspicious at first. And what were we up to? And were we cops or were we informants and so on? And it took a long time to get people's confidence. And eventually got a pad right across the street from this bar, and at 2 o'clock the bar would empty out. They would empty out into our apartment, and we'd sit around and talk and party, and then eventually do interviews. And I got into a lot of trouble for it. This book is now a classic. I mean, 40 years later, it suddenly picked up to be republished because individual copies of it were selling for $500 on the internet.
Yeah, I mentioned that in my intro.
That blew me away
when I saw
now,
how
the
much
time,
the book was selling for.
Yeah. It was collectible. At the time, it got me thrown out of school.
Really?
I'm very sort of proud of the fact that I got thrown out of UC Berkeley for writing a book. I mean, what better reason could you get thrown out of school for?
Why did they throw you out?
Well, I mean, one of the professors came up to me and said, Mr. Milner, he said, we've heard that you were spotted 3 o'clock in the morning driving around in a Cadillac with a black pimp snorting cocaine at 3 o'clock in the morning. Is that what you consider field work? I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, that's exactly what I consider field work. And, you know, if you can't understand that that we're doing something important and interesting, then, you know, then we got to have a parting of the ways, because this is the project we're going to do, because we think it's important, and we think that it's a disgrace that white so-called social scientists claim to know what's going on halfway around the world, and they don't know what's going on right down the block, and they can't even speak the language. So I considered it a kind of a personal voyage myself to encounter this, and I mean it was white people's worst fears. It was the reversal of the white middle class marriage. Now the man didn't bring in the money; the women brought in the money. The man spent his time getting beautiful and spending half a day dressing and hanging out with the other guys, and it was a seen as a reversal of a white middle-class game where the women grabbed the guy's money and treated him like a trick, like a John. And I remember one pimp when we first started was telling me, look how pathetic these guys are, you know. Here's a guy comes into a bar and he says, I'm an engineer. I studied for so many years. I build bridges over water. Now, couldn't I please have some pussy? I've earned it. I should have that. Why can't I? Why won't the women talk to me? Or hey, I'm a, you know, I'm a somebody else that's accomplished. You know, that's worked, that's been educated, and I can't get laid. And what is up with this? The pimps, you know, said, well, this is how we function on exactly this kind of messed up, upside down ignorance of the dominant culture. And it's sort of one of the ways that they would get women was to do a reversal, to get outlaw chicks that for one reason or another wanted to live as outlaws and reverse the game on the man, as they called it. You know. By the way, do you know the difference between a hoe and a bitch?
What's the difference between a hoe and a bitch?
Yeah. Well, a hoe is a woman that will screw anybody in the neighborhood.
Okay.
A bitch is a woman that will screw anybody in the neighborhood, but not you.
Oh, I've heard that before. I knew you were going there.
Okay.
Yeah, brothers,
well, you just let me set it up. So anyway.
Yeah, brothers, that's been going on for a few years now. Yeah, so I wanted you to say that for my listeners. But yeah, I've heard that a few times. That,
sure.
That joke. What's interesting about what you just said is that's still in its own way going on today.
It doesn't change.
A part of it myself.
But you know they say in the game. They say that the players change, but the game remains the same.
Yeah, because the big thing now. I mean, you still, I guess, probably have a few guys who are out there just straight up pimping. But the probably more lucrative industry now is pickup artists. There's a lot of guys who out here pickup artists. Who teach other guys how to attract and seduce women. And the main guys they make fun of is the guys you just described, like that engineer type guy. Is the guy, because there are a lot of guys out here who are intelligent, have college degrees, drive nice cars, got stable homes, but they do not know the first steps of how to attract and seduce women.
Yeah. I could not please have some pussy. Yeah. Well, they claim that that men are brainwashed by their mothers to be, subservient to women and so on. As far as what the pimps that I knew would say about these guys that teach how to pick up women, they'd say, well, you know, that's just step one to them because, you pick up a woman, you take a woman to bed. Now the next step is to get her to pay you. They would consider these guys that are just pickup artists, just giving it away, using all their skill to get women and just giving away the sex and so on.
Back then, was getting interviews, getting close to these pimps and their hoes, was that a challenging endeavor or were they pretty receptive to you?
Well, no, they weren't receptive at first. As I said, they were quite suspicious at first. But I used a little trick that anthropologists use all over the world, which is that if you're going to study a culture or a subculture, you get friendly with the most prestigious people in the culture, not the least. You don't start by talking to somebody that's on the fringes to see what you can get, because then the people that are really good at it won't even talk to you. It's got a pecking order. It's got a sort of prestige order, like any group, so that if you get two or three people talking to you that are very articulate and intelligent and they want to tell you their version of the game and they're willing to sit and talk with you and all of that, well, then the others come around. Everybody else comes around. Oh, you've been talking to so-and-so? Oh, so you're a friend of so-and-so? Well, you must be all right. So little by little, you get in there. It doesn't happen overnight. It took a couple of years.
Okay, that's almost like these movies when you see the undercover cop. It takes them usually months and years to kind of get accepted and people trust them.
Well, it is. The difference is that with an undercover cop, they're looking to bust people, you know, and betray people.
Uh-huh.
And in our situation, we were doing the opposite. we were trying to tell people stories without getting them into trouble. We gave everybody anonymity. We changed their names in the book. And I also made sure that everybody who's in the book either read it before it was printed or they had parts read to them if they couldn't read very well, which happens. So I was more interested in impressing the people that were willing to tell me their story, be honest with me. I was more interested in their approval than in the professor's approval, because the professors and other people that got into this just had it wrong. They just had it wrong out of ignorance. And so our aim was to please our informants, and we did. And there isn't one person that's in that book that ever complained to me that we misquoted them, or we got their story wrong, or we, you know, so just screw them over in some way. Everybody was kind of pleased. They took it to represent their world accurately, and that's what we were going for.
Now, you got to talk to, I want to say, Richard Beck, didn't you, Iceberg Slim?
Yeah, that was Robert Beck was his
Robert
name.
Robert Beck,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, because I've got a couple of his books, man. That dude, he breaks down a lot of games. So how was it to talk to him in person?
Well, that was kind of a strange story, because I was going along with my wife, who's now my ex-wife. We split up many years ago. We have a wonderful daughter.
I read where Iceberg Slim initially wasn't. He was kind of had an adverse reaction to you.
I'll tell you this. What did you read? Did you read that essay I wrote about the what happened between me and Iceberg Slim? Did you read that?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what happened was very simple. I was working on this project when I got a call from a friend of mine in New York who was the editor of one of these so-called girly magazines that they used to have. And they had, you know, articles for men and sexy articles and so on. He said, "Did you ever hear of Iceberg Slim?" I said, "Sure. Well, that's all the hustlers on the street. He's legendary. They read his books. Well, would you like to interview him?" I said, "I'd love to interview him." And of course, he wanted to put in a magazine called Rogue. Doesn't exist anymore. He set it up. And I went down to L.A. from San Francisco, and I was taken to his house by his publisher, his editor. At that time, he was getting on in years, and he was not well. He had diabetes, and he was not doing well with it, and he was in bed. I interviewed him in bed, in his bedroom. And it was very odd, because at this point in his life, he was a family man. He had squared up. He was not, he did not want to go back in the joint. He had a horrible time in prison, and it straightened him out. Now he wanted to live a straight, square life and raise a family. So in the middle of these conversations about pimping in Chicago in the 40s, his young daughters would come in the room and say, "Oh, Daddy, we're going to the store, or we're going to school now." And he'd stop the conversation and very sweetly smile and say, "Oh, yes, darling, and you know, I'll see you later. Are you all right?" You know, like any doting father. And then he'd turn to me and he'd say, "Can you believe it? Two lifetimes. I've had two lifetimes. I started out as the most psychotic mother." He said, I was a psychotic. I hated women because I hated my mother. And you find that some of the best pimps say that, you know, it's all nice to be very lighthearted about this game, and people go in it and they go out of it. But there are some hardcore guys that they are just mean, evil, rotten guys. The interesting thing about the pimp world to me was that it was like any tribe. It was a mixture. People don't all use violence to control their women or even drugs. In fact, many of them said they don't want a strung-out hoe because she's being pimped by the drugs, not by the guy.
Yeah.
They want somebody that's really obedient, that they can own and just, you know, control. And there were some that were able to do that just with psychological adroitness, or what we would call, or what they would call, game.
Yeah.
So here you have a group of people ranging from some very bright, sweet, and intelligent guys to some real bad guys who they themselves called guerrilla pimps that were just, you know, brutal guys.
So I got the impression, and I haven't read the book yet, I've just kind of browsed over different materials from it, but would you say there's almost like 3 degrees of pimps, with the guerrilla pimp being the harshest and meanest, then just your kind of standard pimp, and then the sweet Mac is kind of, I guess, maybe the more a little bit lenient, empathetic pimp? How would you...
it's not a matter of lenient if you get the results that you're after, but I remember one guy said to me, you know, there are as many games as there are players. Every player has...
Their own game
and their own brand. And I remember one guy said to me very early on, he said, you know, what these guys don't want to admit and they don't want to recognize is that in many cases, it's the woman that makes the choice. It's the woman that makes the decision to be with a particular man. It's a woman who decides to live the life. Because otherwise you have a situation known as cop and blow. You get one and she lasts a few weeks and then she gets disillusioned and she leaves and then you got to get another one. And there's constant turnaround, constant replacement. Some of them just have 2 or 3 very deep relationships that go on for years and years. And in many cases, the woman has a dream of owning a beauty shop or something else.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because that's what I was saying, I think, right before the interview. I had a little disagreement with one of my chat room members. My chat room member was saying that I was telling a story about, I have a female acquaintance who was, in her own way, a pimp. Well, I guess she would be called a madam since she's female. But when she was in college, it started out when she had her roommate and another female friend that owed her money. And to get her money back, she made them have sex with men for money. And over a period of months and a year or two, she got up to like 7 or 8 women in her stable. But one thing she told me was that it's not like she had a gun up to their head and, you know, forced him to. She said after a while, she had women coming to her asking to be one of her hoes.
That's what happens if they're good. And I knew a man who had 12 and was very famous in the Bay Area and never got popped either. Some people are extraordinary. They could do that. There was a guy... I'm not going to tell this story because it might get somebody in trouble.
Okay. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Yeah, no, I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Let me ask you, are they more motivated by money, sex, or egotistical control?
Well, those three elements are certainly involved. But the ones that claim to be the real, true, hard Mac pimps are in it for the money. They're in it for the money. They claim they don't care about the sex. They don't care about the women. They only care about the money. But again, you know, I mean, as many games as there are players. And I started to tell you, this one guy was telling me, you know, you think you have a choice. He said, you may put on this great suit of clothes and have this great car, and you might think that you are the sharpest, slickest, and any woman's going to fall for you. And then you find out the woman likes the shape of your ears. She likes something you never thought about. She's attracted to you for reasons that you're not styling about. You're not so slick, and it's not so well constructed. Women sometimes find something in a guy where they think they're seeing through the facade, and they want to rescue him, or they want to save him, or they want to reform him. Or, I mean, you know, men and women relationships are much deeper and more complicated than people want to give it credit for. And so you have to allow for the fact that that women make choices, and sometimes not on the basis that you might think they do. But you want me to get back to the story about Iceberg?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
When I had this interview with him, I published it in Rogue Magazine, And, of course, he signed off on it. I made a tape of it, and he saw it, and he signed off on it. It was published. And then a couple of years later, I stuck it in the book along with the other interviews. And I had meant to send it to him and tell him it was going in the book, but I didn't. And I wasn't trying to fool anybody. I just didn't get to it. And I got a letter from his lawyer saying, Iceberg Slim never heard of you. He's going to sue you. You made all this stuff up. He wrote an essay in his book, The Naked Soul of Iceberg Slim, where he slammed Christina and said that, you know, this was all a fiction. And I sent to him and to his lawyer, of course, the interview in Rogue magazine. I said, listen, here's the interview. Look at it now. You'll remember it. And I own the interview. You signed off on it. And, you know, I did it for the magazine, and I own it, and I was paid for it. And I can use any way I like. And Iceberg, there wasn't anything he could do about it. At that point, he realized that, like it or not, I had the right to use his words in the book. He did sit for me. And he never said I misquoted him or that I said, or that I in any way didn't get it right. Everything in that is absolutely accurate. And he had to just live with the fact that, oh, maybe the trickster got tricked once.
Uh-huh. Now let me, what does it mean to, it's all about the skull game? Does that mean it's all about the psychology? What are some of the more interesting methodology and psychology of some of the top-notch pimps?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they say. It's a skull game. I forget what the opposite of that is. It's not a, skull game. He means they don't have to beat anybody up. It's game. It's just dealing with the psychology of that female and manipulating it. That's the skull game of it.
You know what I found interesting, and I'm sure a lot of these guys told you this, and this is just based on my own individual experience, is that I find that a good number of women who are really, really attractive, who are used to men playing up to their egos and fawning over them and offering to wine and dine them, when they meet a guy
who's not impressed,
goes against the grain, is treats them like their beauty is not really impressive.
They can get this guy.
That you can have, not all of those women, but a good number of them, you can have them kind of in it, because I don't want to my horn necessarily, but that's how I guess to put it, ran game on certain women, is that when I saw a woman that was real fine, like say a 9 or a 10 on a scale from 1 to 10, I saw other guys were playing up their ego and offering, I would be the guy that would go against the grain and basically treat her like she wasn't shit.
That's
and
it.
I would gain a, like, this kind of influence over her.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
And I find that interesting that women tend to be so intrigued by that. And, like, again, this goes back to this criticism I got from the chat room that, you know, some people, and of course the feminist types feel this way, but some people think the only way a pimp will be getting hoes is, again, to be coercive and forceful. But in my experience and observation, that is so untrue. There's a lot of women that want to be dominated by men. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I made a comparison in the back of the book between that typical story and the story of Othello, you know, from Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. Great story.
Because when Othello cops Desdemona, all the old white guys, her father and everybody else, they can't understand. She's so beautiful. She can have anybody. Her father says he must, I don't remember the quote, but he says he must have drugged her. He must have used strange charms and drugs and so on. And then Othello gives that great speech, my most grave and reverend noble signors. And then he tells them, it wasn't with any drugs, and it wasn't with any charms, and it wasn't with any violence. It was with, he says in Shakespearean terms, it was with my rap. I told her about hairbreadth escapes. I told her about my battles, where I led armies. I told her about my strange adventures in foreign lands. That's how I got her. So this is an old story, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. This is just interesting. Now, what is chippying? Chippying. What is that?
It's just cheating with another woman. You're chippying. You're taking money from one woman, and you're treating her like crap, and she adores you. And meanwhile, you're taking her money, and you're spending it on some cocktail waitress or something, and you're being a pimp on one side and a trick on the other side. Chippying is sort of, you're letting your sex run out of control and you're not getting any money for it. The answer to chippying is to tell your girlfriend, oh, well, I'm just doing it for the money. This girl don't mean nothing to me. It's more money for us. Then chippying is allowed.
Okay.
You there?
Huh?
Yeah.
Now, what would you say is the key that the pimps told you? What was the key to them keeping their hoes from being seduced by rival pimps?
Well, first of all, in the traditional pimp society, and I don't know how it works today or in what cities, but traditional pimp society, there were first of all very elaborate rules about who could cop who. And you went out at night. They would go to different, like, nighttime restaurants after the stroll, and you'd see what girls were with who and with whom, and everybody would make it known whose woman was whose.
Okay.
And for a woman to be alone in that situation was without a man was very unnerving, because then all the men would hit on her. And she might feel that she had to get a man just to protect her from the other men. She had to have somebody that she could come to at the end of the night and know that she was going to be protected in their way, in their world. The answer to your question is, number one, there are elaborate mechanisms. For example, the men often gather and without the women and have their little status order, you know, and establish who's who and what's what, and you get to know who's more powerful in the hierarchy and so on, and who you don't want to mess with. You don't want to mess with their women. Some of them will tell you, you know, you try and cop my woman, I'll kill you. I mean, it's very simple. On the other hand, women leave and go to other pimps all the time. So there's nothing foolproof to keep your women from wandering or getting copped by somebody else. But there are all these kind of social mechanisms in place. Men are supposed to respect each other. Men are supposed to uphold each other. Bros before hoes and all of that, you know.
Bros before hoes. Now, let me ask you. I was reading the table of contents,
mm-hmm.
and I want to ask them a couple of questions related to things I've seen. Like, there's one section that says, brainwashing tricks and hoes are trained by mom. What does that mean?
Well, that's what I started to say before, is that they feel a man is trained to be a trick by mom. Mm-hmm. Open the car door for the lady, give all your money to the lady, go get a job and support the lady, let her do the shopping. You're trained to be a trick. And the women trained to be hoes in the sense that they're trained to find a man who has bucks and set up a situation where the woman is getting the benefit and the man is really working for her. So
I read where Heidi Fleiss, who was that infamous madam, she made a bold statement. She said, I believe all women deep down are whores. She said, every woman has their price. Some is higher than others, but she said, every woman, if you throw the right price, they're going to give you some pussy. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I mean,
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I just...
Let me ask, what do you think about her statement?
What do you think
about
that?
When I was in the game and I was trying to represent people in the game, I would print their statements sort of unchallenged, you know. But Christina was getting stuff from the women's point of view, too. And she was visiting the women and the children sometimes in the daytime. And that's one of the ways you would check on these guys and find out, oh, I got 8 hoes, and then you find out, well, no, actually, he has 2 women, and they live in a rather poor apartment, but they have a fancy car, and they make a splash at night. And, you know, you find out the real story, because a lot of it is fronting. Fronting off.
That's funny to hear you say that, fronting,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, you want to hear me talk pimp talk? Man, this dude wasn't doing nothing but skip, scat, and damn games, Jim. He had played every game there was to play. It looked like Worse was going to kick around, kick him dead in the head, understand me? The devil wasn't even giving him no evil breaks. And pretty soon, he met a young lady, struck love to the young man's heart, and struck money to the young man's pocket. Pretty soon, man, they play in a game called Knick Knack and Pimp and Snack. He corner to corner and street to street, man. He got hoes holding him down. The hawk is out there, man, kicking ass and taking names. But them bitches got to be out there turning in them dead presidents. How's that?
That's pretty good. Now, this section intrigues me, so I definitely want you to enlighten me on this section. The section where it says, player's view of the square world. I noticed that. You say that the pimps tend to frequently refer to regular guys as squares. What, enlighten me briefly on trick marriage, chump job, and the hypocrisy of squares.
Well, we've just been talking about exactly that.
Oh, okay.
Trick marriage is where the man works his ass off, gives his money to the woman, is grateful if he ever gets a piece of pussy, doesn't cheat. That's a trick marriage.
Okay.
And... But to get back to your question, is every woman a hoe, depending on how much you offer her? I would turn the question around now and say, is every person a hoe, if you want to be fair about it?
Well, that is a valid question.
You know, is every person a hoe when it comes down to what you would do for money?
Well, you know what's funny?
What your price is.
You know who lightheartedly referred to himself as a hoe one time was movie star and comedian Eddie Murphy. He once said in an interview... He was talking about how the movie game worked.
Yes.
And that's what he said. He said, basically, I'm nothing but a hoe. He said, the studio executives are basically the pimps.
Yeah, of course.
He said, the actors and actresses are the hoes.
Yes.
And he said, the people who buy the movie tickets are the tricks.
Well,
and,
yeah, I mean, you could look at society that way, and in black players, we do that. The pimps talked a lot about, for instance, pimps that turn around in later life and become preachers, and then they're pimping their congregation, but now they're respectable, and they tell the same lies about, you know, how you give me the money and you're going to be just. You're just going to be fine. Your life is going to be wonderful. Like these women I told you, they think they're going to get a flower shop someday or a beauty salon. That's called a hoe's dream. A hoe's dream is defined as something that will never come true.
I should be laughing at that, but that's just
well, you know, but
me.
That's the way they are, and that's the way they talk, and all I'm adding to it after all these years and having experience inside and outside of it is that there's more to it. There's just human nature to it, because the pimps, too, will, even Iceberg Slim, if you read some of his books, there was one guy that claimed he had complete control over his dick and everything else, and he went to see this pimp. I remember the scene in the book, and someone says to him, I bet you if I put my woman with you in 2 minutes, you're going to come. No, I don't know. I can resist any woman. I don't live by my dick. You know, bring them on. They can do anything they want. Then came the money. You know, of course I wouldn't do that. Well, how much would you do it for anyway? You know, so the guy was offered a couple of $100 on the spot, and the woman, of course, got him off in about 30 seconds, and he was disgraced in front of the other pimps.
Wow.
And Iceberg Slim told that story, so.
Wow.
You know.
That's a deep story.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Now, also, well, first of all, I noticed you said in one section, or maybe in an interview, that there have been some white pimps, but most of the white pimps tended to mimic the behavior of the black male pimps.
Well, there's a lot of mimicry of black underworld culture in general. I mean, the language, the music, and then the clothing and everything else. But the white pimps have been much less visible. The black pimps like to go out on the street, or they did, I don't know if they still do, flash their cars, flash their clothes, and so on. The white pimps tend to be behind the scenes, produce porn movies, run brothels where it's legal in Nevada, and you never hear about them. Because they don't put their business on the street. But there's certainly more white pimps, and in many cases they're more successful at it because they're more businesslike about it. They don't necessarily tangle their egos up with it.
Now, is there any such thing as, a question I got from my chat room, is there any such thing as a female pimp, or when a female is a pimp, she's referred to as a madam?
No, not necessarily. In fact, you just gave a perfect example of a female pimp. Was this woman in college that started turning out her co-eds? My guess would be, from what I've seen, that she would be gay, that she would be a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the female pimps that I ran into, there weren't a lot of them, but almost all of them had sex with the women.
Mm-hmm.
And said that, you know, we don't need a man, none of us need a man.
Interesting.
So where I see a woman that has five or six women, I'd be very surprised if it's not a lesbian situation.
Now, Iceberg Slim said in his book, he made one comment I found interesting. He said you had to be really hard line with the hoes because they were always going to try to test you. They were going to test you. What stories have you heard about women trying to test their pimps?
Oh, well, that's just so common. It's not just women testing their pimps. I think people test each other in relationships all the time. And if you want to make it into a man-woman thing, women test their men all the time, especially when a relationship is new. But I'll tell you, if you look at friendship in general, I think people have to test each other. I'm very happy with the few friends that I have, and many of them I've had for a very long time, very deep friendships. But in the early stages of it, at some point you find that you test each other. I remember even when I was on the set there with the pimps in San Francisco, one of them, who was one of my chief informants, got into an argument with one of the bartenders in the club, and the guy took a carton of bottles of beer or something and threw them across the bar to try to hit this guy in the head.
Wow.
Because the guy really was insulting him and seeing how far he could push him. And it missed him by about an inch. And then he says, I'm going down to the police station and turn him in. And you're my witness. You want to come with me? I said, sure. So I went with this pimp down to the police station to turn in the bartender for you know, attacking him. And he kept asking me all the way over there, are you sure you're going to do this? You're going to side with me against a white bar owner? I said, yeah. Well, by the time we got to the policeman at the station and we were ready to fill out the forms, he turned to me and he said, I'm not going to press charges. I just wanted to see how far you were going to go with me.
Interesting.
That's a test. Are you willing to stand up with a black pimp against a white bartender? We'll find out pretty fast what side you're on. But as I say, in ordinary friendships, you test your friends all the time at the beginning. If you don't, you're a fool. Because then you get in a situation where one day down the road, where you think you can depend on somebody, and you do, and you find out they're not there for you. I mean, you want somebody as a friend that's going to be in the barricades with you at the end.
Very true.
You know?
Very true. Now, what is this about the white woman as buffer? What does that mean?
I'm not remember the context of that.
Okay, it's under race and sex. You have forbidden fruit, interracial sex fantasies, black on white makes green.
Right.
The white woman as buffer.
Well, what's it say under white woman as buffer? Give me a clue.
Well, this is from the table of contents I'm reading.
Okay, I don't remember the context of it. I wrote that book 40 years ago. I should say my ex-wife and I wrote that book. I want to be sure that everybody knows that it was a collaborative effort, and even though I'm talking to you today, she could just as well be talking to you. We did it together. It was an amazing journey that we had.
Now, some people have said that the business world, and I'd already talked about how Eddie Murphy commented on the movie industry. Would you say that corporate America and just other aspects of life have almost kind of imitated the pimp whole trick structure?
No, I don't think it imitates it. I think it is it. You know, I mean, the pimp whole structure is just one aspect. The whole society is like that. It didn't come from pimps and hoes. I mean, the fact that what Eddie Murphy said is so true, particularly of artists, and as a writer myself, I mean, I feel that, you know, we are the talent, and we go out there and we do our thing, because we have to do it, because we love to do it, whether there's a lot of money to it or not, and usually there is not. And who really benefits from it is the publisher. And all the various other people in the business, and the same thing in the movie business. The talent, the writers, the actors make very little compared to the people that own the theaters, the people that own the film companies, people that own the studios, whatever it may be. And as I said before, pimp could be a preacher pimping his congregation. He could be a producer pimping his actors. He could be wherever. And you want that. And I think this is the point Eddie Murphy was making, that you might be offended by that at first, but then you realize that if you're really good ho, if you're a star of the stable, you'll be all that more valuable, because the more money that you can make for these people, the bigger you are, the more money you will make. I would love to be, you know, in the top 97% the top 3% of authors that make a lot of money, even though it means my publisher would make a lot more than me. But you want that. I mean, there's nothing worse than a woman who just you can't even give her pussy away, or an artist that can't give his art away.
Hey, Richard, I'm going to take a real, three-minute intermission, and then I'm going
to
come right back
with
some more conversation and let you get a swig of water. Listeners, if you want to call in and ask a question, 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. I'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Dangerously, and you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com, and remember, keep it dangerous.
Thank you.
Roger Curry of upfront and straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
There's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindsets is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So the listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger. Now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that. Yeah.
Oh, man, you got to love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with book author and researcher Richard Milner on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to the first episode of the calendar year 2011 of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We've been having the most interesting discussion about a most interesting topic, which is black pimps and the whole world and subculture of pimps, prostitutes, running game. And I'm speaking with historian, researcher, and anthropologist Richard Milner. But right now, I got a special treat for my listeners. I'm about to bring in a gentleman who I mentioned at the introduction of the show has recently purchased the rights to this book because he fell in love with the book and was very fascinated by the content in the book.
And he is a very popular dating and relationships guru and book author. He has a number of books on his resume, including The Mac Within, The Art of Gold Digging, The Elite Way, and Play or Be Played, What Every Female Should Know About Men, Dating, and Relationships. He hosts his own talk radio podcast program, Mac Lessons Radio, which is listened to by thousands of men and women all over the country and all over the world. So on behalf of Upfront and Straightforward and Blog Talk Radio listeners, give it up for Mr. Tariq Nasheed.
What's up, brother Tariq? What's up, Al? How you doing, bro?
Oh, man, I am just chilling. I'm trying to start the new year off right. And what better way to start off in relation to this show than to have this discussion about black players, the secret world of black pimps. Now, it's interesting. Richard is emphasizing. He wrote this book 40 years ago, him and his wife, his ex-wife. And I haven't actually read it myself. I've just read excerpts. But I can tell that so much of the content is still relevant to male-female relationships today. And I guess my first question to you would be, when did you first hear about this book, and what part of the book just grabbed your attention and made you become fascinated with it?
Yeah, man, I heard about the book about 10, 15 years ago, and I was the book was very hard to find, and this was before like the internet was really, really popping. So I heard about it through word of mouth and from other books because, you know, I would stay in the library and just read a bunch of stuff. So I would have to go to a library downtown and read the reference copy, and I had to actually go to a copy machine in the library and make copies of it in there because the book was just not available anywhere else. The book was out of print. But the game was so heavy in the book, I'm like, wow, this is deep. And after I got myself together, I started putting my own books out. I always thought about that book, and I always looked for that book, and it was just never available anywhere. And the places it was available, it was extremely expensive. I did eventually get a copy off eBay about 6 years ago. So I just been in love with the book. The game has been very heavy in the book. And the book transcends the pimp game. It talks about basic man-woman relationships, and that's the thing that enamored me about the book. And the game is heavy in that book.
Now, it's funny. What's interesting, in that book, the pimps tend to refer to guys who are more passive and weak and play up to women as squares. And I know a term you made very popular is simps. Would you say simp is kind of the modern day equivalent to what those pimps would call squares?
Well, no, because the thing is, a square wasn't a bad thing. And that book is great because that book breaks down the real meanings of all these words. See, a lot of these words and terms, they've been misconstrued over the years to fit what these guys are doing in the game. Like a lot of dudes will call women tricks now. Oh, she's a trick-ass female. But the trick is something that refers to a guy who spends money.
Exactly.
A lot of guys call themselves players because they go to the strip joint. That's not what a player does. This book tells you exactly what a player is, what a pimp, what a Mac. It breaks all that down. And I like that because it's the essence of what the game is. It tells you the unwritten rules of the game that a lot of people don't know about. So when I say simp is more of a modern term. It's more of a variation of the word simpleton, of a guy who's just weak and desperate and don't have any kind of game, will do anything to get around a woman, to do anything to get with a woman. So that's where that word came from. But the book has all the terminology that explains what the game is about.
Now, another thing I'm sure, based on some shows I've heard of yours, is that I recently traveled with a gentleman named David X. And what I was impressed with by David X, he's a very knowledgeable historian. But what was interesting is he would talk about different countries and their history, but he always had a connection between history and male-female dynamics, male-female relationship. Like, he was breaking down some stuff about London that I never knew that basically amounted to a lot of kings trying to get some pussy. And I noticed that you are big on history. Do you think a lot of people in society tend to almost treat dating and relationships like it's trivial and not realize the connection that that aspect of our life has with creating major history?
Well, history and relationship, it goes hand in hand, because people would travel and families would travel and people would travel for food and for resources, and the family played a major part. The man, being the dominant male, he had to attract a certain type of female. He had to attract a female that was compatible. So all that goes hand in hand with history and anthropology and the whole thing. So I think a lot of nations were built out of the relationship dynamic. That's one of the aspects. There's many reasons why nations were built, but that's one way to look at it.
Now, you recently purchased the rights to Black Players, and what provoked you to make that move? And secondly, I've been hearing rumors that you might try to turn it into like either a movie or a documentary.
No, I'm not going to do a documentary about it, but a movie, that might be down the line. But what made me want to purchase the rights to the book is that a lot of people kept saying to me, because I always talk about the book on my podcast, and people were saying, like, man, somebody need to get the rights to that book, man. Somebody need to re-release that book. And the thing is, with Black books, we always say somebody needs to do something instead of we should do something. So I have that attitude, like, okay, I should get the rights to it and put the book out. We got to stop waiting on other people to do stuff for us. Just like with this documentary I'm working on. I'm working on a documentary now. It's not about Black Players, but it's about it's a history documentary. And we always talk about what somebody needs to do as far as selling our story. Somebody needs to talk about the Moors. Somebody needs to talk about the Black presence in Asia. Somebody needs to talk about the African presence in Europe. So we need to talk about that. You understand that? So we got to start getting on the ball and handling business and do stuff that we want other people to do.
Okay. Well, I know you're out and about, so I guess my final thing would be let my listeners know. Well, I guess you just did with one project. I was going to say let my listeners know any upcoming events, projects you have on the table.
Absolutely. You know, I got the documentary called Hidden Colors that's going to be available on DVD in around March or April. I'm going back on tour this year. I went on tour last year all over the world, sold out lectures all over the place. The fellas were wonderful. This year we're going to focus on the ladies. I'm going to do some lectures for women this year. I'm going to be in Raleigh, North Carolina pretty soon, down in Houston again. I'm going to do Chicago again. We're going to do Detroit. I got to get you out on the road, Al, so you can drop some of this game with us players, man. We need you to spit some of that hot fire too, man.
All right. Definitely, man. Let me know when you're coming to Chicago, man. I definitely want to connect with you, man, because that's my neck of the woods. So,
absolutely.
Well, brother, man, I really appreciate you calling in, man, and contributing your thoughts on this book, and continued success to you. And
I appreciate you buying my book and putting it out there again.
Hey, what's up, Richard? There you go. You were quiet back there.
I got to tell you, Tariq, you really have excellent taste.
Yes, sir.
Putting this book out, I hope you make money on it, man, because I couldn't think of anything better than to have you be pimping me.
Yeah. I hope you are a good hole.
See, I'm serious. I'm serious. Tariq makes a lot of money on this book. That will raise my stock.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that goes, you see? That is the way it goes. And I don't, you know, so people said to me, well, he's only paying you a flat fee. He's not paying you royalties. He could make a fortune and you wouldn't get more money. I said, that's fine. I hope he makes a fortune. It cannot hurt me for Tariq to make a fortune.
I think this book will make Tariq a nice sum. Because like we talked about earlier, man, the rates I saw this book going for, I haven't heard any major criticism of it yet.
No,
anybody
but
who's wrote
become a true collectible because it has withstood the test of time because that's the way I build them. I build them to last.
Yeah.
If it's not worth my total time, my total passion, my total dedication, night and day, for months or years, then what's the point of doing a book? Because chances are you're not going to make money out of it. So if you got your choice between putting out some crap and not making money out of it, or putting out something fine and not making money out of it, I think I'd take the fine.
Exactly. Exactly.
And by the way, do I have time to plug my other stuff?
Oh, I'm gonna let you plug whatever you want to, Rich. Right now, though, I wanted to let Tariq say any last comments he had, because he's kind of out and about. I know he has to go, so
any final comments, Tariq? Well, I just want to thank him again publicly for picking up a 40-year-old book and seeing the quality of it, and I hope he makes a good killing with it.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, man. And also, everybody, man, check out my show, MacLessonsRadio.com. And you guys can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/TariqNasheed. And let's chop up game.
All right, brother, man. Well, again, like I said, continued success to you, man. And definitely keep me posted about your tour and when you come to Chicago. And we're going to have to rap about some things.
Absolutely. All right. Peace, Rich. I'm going to holler at you, Richard.
All right. That was King Flex, Tariq Nasheed. Author of many books himself, and again, he's recently purchased the rights to the book. Let me see. I think I got a caller, and I think I know who this is. Eric O 253. Is this my main man, EVP3?
This is me, man. Happy
What's
New
up,
Year.
Brother? Happy New Year to you. Yeah, man, I didn't do my shout-outs because all you listeners, you normally hear me do my shout-outs when I say Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam III, childhood friend, lives in Seattle, listens to just about every show I do. Much love to him and his family. But what is your question or comment related to the conversation tonight, EVP?
Well, the comment is that definitely it's a very interesting, fascinating show. But I want to definitely say hello to Richard.
Hello.
He's here on your show. Well, the question I had in thinking about all this is I was wondering, I know Richard was 40 years ago, but certainly very relevant. I guess one of the questions that was going through my mind all the time in terms of the pimp and copying and approaching women, I know that we said, the game changes and certainly all of that. And women, you're going to have different women in terms of like a pimp approaching a woman. She's going to be this race or that race. But I was wondering in your research and in writing the book and talking to the pimps, was there like a common denominator, say, for example, that they would share with you in terms of, because I'm envisioning this, they would go up this woman that they're going to approach to have her become their work for them, what have you. It's something that they would intuitively know, pick up on, personality-wise, or common denominator type thing that they would see, maybe in their personality, that they know that it's someone that they can bring on board. Was there much mention of that? My question is that, with everybody being different, certainly, but I would think there would be some common denominator or some common denominators that they would pick up on, the pimp, that is, that they know that I could approach this woman and be able to bring her on, have her become my hoe, so to speak. Think of anything that they share with you along those lines that was common between the women, in other words, no matter what the nationality, race, what have you.
Well, I have said earlier that part of it is in the woman a desire to be an outlaw to some extent. And back in the day, for there to be a mixed race couple was even more of a rebel act. Today, much less so. But in those days, when you crossed the color line, you were making a very strong statement, and then you might not be able to go back to your parents if you had any. You were
going against your upbringing. There was this rebel thing, this outlaw thing, and they could spot that in women. In other cases, it would be women that were just at totally loose ends. They didn't know what to do with themselves. They just had no idea what to do with themselves. A pimp can spot this. Oh, you got nothing to do with yourself? I'll give you something to do. You know. One pimp said to me, I play to the people who I can see already turned on to me. You get that radar up and sense that that woman wants that particular man. Some guys in the life, when I was writing about it, they didn't even want a woman that had already been with other pimps. They thought that was ruined already because somebody else had taught him their game and somebody else had taught him a different version of the game, and they preferred to turn women out who were not in the game.
And I should have made that a little more clear. That was more I was looking at. It was someone that hasn't been in the game. That was just I don't want to call it fresh. Just hasn't been in the game. They approach someone that hasn't been working in the game, hasn't worked for any other pimp. Just fresh, just right off the, impromptu. In other words, just right off the bat. It was something they saw. So
yeah, but see, now that Tariq's got a book out on how the women can spot the game and reverse the game, it makes it a little evens up the playing field a little bit.
But he's going to get make your book go a lot further, so that'll tip the balance again.
For sure. Any more questions or comments, EVP?
No, I think he definitely answered my question.
Well, man, to tell you, mom, man, I gotta have some of that peach cobbler, man.
I told her you mentioned it on the show and stuff, and she laughed and she said, "Yeah, to call her up, she might get motivated."
Hey, Richard, have you ever had a peach cobbler? You laugh.
Peach cobbler, that was Red Fox's favorite line. It always ended with a peach cobbler and a Diet Rite cola.
Peach cobbler is so good, and my friend here, EVP, his mom makes peach cobbler that's like going to go in the Peach Cobbler Hall of Fame at some point. Yeah, man, I bet you, Richard, I bet you a lot of these pimps, man, back in the day was eating some peach cobbler. I bet you they was eating some peach cobbler.
Absolutely.
That's just a staple in the black community.
But
much love to you, EVP. Thank you for calling in. Now, Richard, speaking of, he was just mentioning about turning out. I noticed that's covered in your book about.
Right.
I guess you've already said that for as many players as there are, there's different games and
yes.
Techniques, but that being said, was there any one, like, I know I have my own little, I guess, methods for turning a woman out, but what was a manner that you heard that raised your eyebrows of turning a woman out?
Yeah, don't give up too much game now here.
they really got you in the lingo. The game is to be sold, not told.
Hey, above all, you see, I try to put in the complexities. It's very easy to just talk one way about this, but I think one of the things we found is dealing with so many different kinds of people, so many different levels of game, so many people that just followed the leader, followed other people, and were those that were innovative and had their own way, didn't want to have anything to do with the other pimps, dressed differently, struck out in their own way, with their own methods. I try to build up. That's maybe why the book has life, because it's not simple. It's complicated, and The minute you get into it, you relate to all this other stuff. I mean, you relate into sex, you relate into money, you relate into racism, you relate into all this stuff. One of the things that I talked about early on when we were first doing this was the difference between the sweet Mac, we were talking about that before, and then the bad man. The two strategies for getting it at what was conceived of at that time, the man, the white man. One way was to confront him directly, like the Panthers would have said in the 60s, by any means necessary, justice, no peace, and so on. And then there were the players and the pimps who said, oh, we don't want to confront anybody. We don't want to be carrying guns. You can get shot that way. You know, we want to sneak up behind the man, lift his wallet out of his pocket, and cut off his balls, and he doesn't even know it.
Well, let me ask you this. How did, since pimping and prostitution wasn't legal, what was their techniques for preventing themselves from getting arrested and getting caught?
Well, I mean, I don't know how it is in most parts of the country, but at that time in San Francisco, you would almost never hear of a pimp getting busted. First of all, they didn't solicit for prostitution. A lot of people think a pimp solicits. He goes down the street and says, hey, mister, I got a great girl here for $100. They don't do that. And Iceberg Slim was horrified at the thought that he would ever set a price or find a trick. No, the girl's got to do all that. The woman's got to do all that. He just stays back. If your game isn't complete before it's left you, then it is not complete, and you don't have game. You have to be able to trust the woman, send her out, and do her business, and come back to you at the end. So the business about pimping as being bustable, well, you can't really bust. The only time you're going to get a pimp busted is when he's violent and he goes off and he beats up a woman, or worse. And then,
okay, what percentage of the time would you roughly say that happened, where a pimp had to beat one of his hoes down?
Well, again, it depends on the personality. Some guys think that's the only way they can get their way, and then when they do that violent stuff, they usually end up in jail or dead. It's not a tried and true technique. I mean, I can't give percentages. I don't operate in terms of getting numbers and statistics.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, you said you wrote this 40 years ago. How old are you?
Oh, I look 25. I'm 69.
69. Oh, 69. Okay,
yeah.
So you were 29 when you... Wow, you were young when you wrote this book.
Yes. Yes, those were the days.
So you had some balls, man. Want to hang out with the players and the pimps to find out this information?
Yes.
Now, what did your close friends, relatives, and family members think about you?
Nothing that's worthwhile is ever easy.
What did your close friends, relatives, and family members think of your pursuits at that time?
They thought I was out of my fucking mind. And they were afraid I'd get killed, or she would get killed, or I'd get thrown out of school, which I did. And here's the beauty of it, too. I was thrown out by University of California. After finishing my PhD orals, they just could not swallow this. But we maneuvered with the department. It ended up that she did get her PhD on it. And I got a career as a writer out of it. Yes, I had nothing else. There's nothing else for me to do. Although I did teach anthropology for a couple of years, but basically it's all right. I'm happy to have been a writer all these years. Although the anthropologist did review it in the anthropology journals with approval as being a good study. It was difficult. I mean, to explain it to people or to tell people what you were doing, they'd usually turn up their noses. or wonder why in the hell you would ever think of doing such a thing. It's funny how it becomes fairly obvious many years later that it is interesting and it is important and it does have meaning.
Now, somebody from the chat room asked me to ask you about Bob Adelman.
Oh, yeah, Big Bob.
Okay, can you let my listeners know who is Bob Adelman and what was his relationship to you?
Well, Bob Adelman is a Life magazine. He was a Life magazine photographer when I met him.
Okay.
He's one of the most brilliant photographers in the world. And he's put out book after book of his photographs, and he's become a multimillionaire through his books. He's a brilliant photographer, a brilliant book producer. He lives down in Florida now. He put out a book called Gentlemen of Leisure. And in that book, he did a photo essay with pimps, which they had asked me to do, but I said I thought it was impossible. Nobody wanted their pictures taken. But Bob goes in there, and he gets a family to open up to him, and he does a whole photo chronicle of their lives. Gentlemen of Leisure was a huge bestseller. And I met him on a radio show that we did together when his book, Gentlemen of Leisure, came out and Black Players came out at the same time. And we were all on a radio show together. And we were so delighted and relieved to discover that the two of us, being both white guys, well, I'm almost white, I'm Jewish, but for two so-called white guys to have come to the same conclusions, the same language, at two different parts of the country. He's doing it in New York. I'm doing it in San Francisco. And when we compare notes at the end of the day in our books, there wasn't one point of disagreement. And that also showed me that the pimp-ho culture exists in every major American city. It was not just in San Francisco. It was not just the 50 or 100 people we were talking to. It was something that you could find instantly. And one of the things that was interesting to me was you'd go into these bars in San Francisco and you'd meet guys who were just in from Chicago or just in from Detroit or just in from somewhere in the South, and they'd all be totally in the game. They totally fit in, and one day they knew exactly where they were, who they were with, the language they spoke was all the same. So it's a national thing. In fact, it's an international thing, and that was great for me to realize that we had got it right.
Okay. Now, would you say it's unfair? A lot of women, and again, particularly the feminist types, tend to say the term pimp is almost synonymous with a misogynist. Would you say that is a valid statement, or would you argue that there are men who are not necessarily misogynistic who can function well as pimps?
Well, that's a difficult question, because some of them, and some of them were good friends of mine, can be very, very charming and don't seem like misogynist at all. But in fact, there has to be some kind of underlying feeling or lack of feeling. I mean, if you want to talk about horrible, misogynistic, women-hating people, don't ask me. Ask Iceberg Slim. He was the first one to come out and say that.
Interesting.
I was a misogynist. I was a psychotic. I was absolutely going down the wrong path. And yet, and in his old age, he could go on the street, and if he'd see a guy counting his money in public or something, he'd go up and he'd try to advise the younger players, hey, man, don't do that. He's trying to improve their game. And at the same time, he's telling them, don't go into the life. It's a waste. Don't do it. He was very disappointed also that when he got on the bandwagon of Black Power and everything, they wanted to talk to the younger guys who were Black Panthers and stuff like that. They wanted nothing to do with him. They thought he was dirty. And he was very disappointed with that. What do you mean I was dirty? I was a groundbreaker. I was a pioneer. Before you kids ever thought of being Panthers, you know, this is how we got ours. This is how we, you know, it was different. It was a struggle. It was, you know, they had all their excuses and everything else. But, yeah, there's certainly misogynism there. At the same time, I have known people in my life, black and white, who, with an understanding of game probably more in the way that Tariq does, that they could have a very successful love life and manipulate their love life the way they wanted it, not the way the women wanted it. And not looking for money from the women, just looking for escaping the trick marriage and so on. Just looking on, you know, living their life on their own terms, having women on their own terms, and some of them liked women very much. Just didn't want them around more than 2 days a week. When the
now,
next shift comes in,
were you and or your ex-wife able to see women who had, say, been in the game for a while, but then once they got into either their early to mid-30s or mid to late-30s, they were able to transition into a, for lack of a better word, a conventional lifestyle?
Well, many of them had to. They simply had to. They reached the end of their rope. Guy had disappointed them many times. They bailed him out of jail too many times to remember, or he left them for a younger girl, or they couldn't hack it anymore, or they got tired of doing it, or they weren't as pretty as they once were, or not as reckless, not as much of a rebel. Anyone that survived, actually, I've known many that were in the life that later turned out to be secretaries or in corporate life or in some working for the government. People in straight jobs in their middle age who you would have never suspected that when they were young they were in the life. There were some that did survive that way by just shifting gears and shifting their lives. And did survive, maybe somewhat wiser and sadder.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell my listeners about any projects you might have coming up, any events, any books.
Well, I'm doing an awful lot of stuff. I went back after the after Black Players. I went back to one of my first loves, which was the natural history and science and evolution, which was also part of my anthropology training. I wrote a biography of Darwin. I wrote a big book called Darwin's Universe. And any of your people or readers, go to Amazon.com, look up my book, Darwin's Universe. It's the most amazing thing. It took me 15 years, and it's got 600 essays that I wrote and 400 pictures, and it's science from the point of view of people, a very, very fascinating cast of characters, because it wasn't just Darwin sitting around thinking up a theory. It was thousands of people, ship's captains and gorilla watchers and dinosaur diggers and explorers. And it's just a fascinating human enterprise to figure out what kind of creatures we are and where we come from. And I go for the human stories. I go for the dramatic or the humorous stories. You could also go to my website, www.darwinlive.com. And you'll see a video of my show, Darwin Live. I wrote songs about Darwin. I've always been very unconstrained as far as my creative abilities. I like to write. I like to perform. I like to sing. I like to do original lyrics. If you go to YouTube and put my name in, Richard Milner, you'll see 5 or 6 different videos that have been put up there. One of them is from the New York Times that had 60,000 hits about my Darwin show. And then there are others I put up, my blues. I wrote a blues for Mr. Scopes at the Scopes trial. That's up there.
Well,
and,
real quick,
and
it looks like
others.
I'm going to take one last second call if they can make it quick. Yeah. Here we go, 540. I'm running out of time, but if you got a quick question or comment, go ahead.
Yes, I have a quick comment. My name is Mercedes. I'm originally from Brooklyn, and I was a professional gentleman. I caught the ending of your show. I wish I would have caught it earlier. And the question that I have to ask, where has he getting a lot of his information from, and has he really talked to some down-to-earth players, professional gentlemen?
Oh, yeah, he's talked to them all. He talked to some of the top-notch ones in the 70s that were in the Bay Area. He's the author of the book. I don't know if you know the history of my guest, but he's authored a book, Black Players, The Secret World of Black Pimps, and, yeah, his research was very thorough.
Okay, because I missed it. I'm not taking anything away, but like I said, I'm from the Brooklyn area. I'm pretty well known in Brooklyn, and it was the early 80s when I was around in Brooklyn, New York, from 23rd and Lexington Avenue to 50th Street in Manhattan. And I'd like to catch a show another time or get to talk to him because I have something that might be, you know, he might be able to use it in the next book or in some more research because there's a lot of things I think some brothers leave out because they don't want it to be known.
Hey, Richard, can you give him your contact information right now?
Well, if you do you have your number up? Do you have your own email up?
Yes,
can people reach you?
Yes.
Well, have them write you, and then you forward it to me.
Okay.
Hey, caller, why don't you write me, and then I'll forward it to Richard. Write me at Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio at mode1.net. mode1.net. Blog Talk Radio at mode1.net. You pass me on your information, and I'll pass it on Richard, and then you guys can connect.
That'll work because I'm getting ready to start my own broadcast radio show because a friend of mine put me onto it. He's also a professional gentleman. It's about three or four of us that's known in that Brooklyn area for some great things and some bad things.
Okay.
Sounds to me like Alan or Tariq are the ones you want to talk to.
Yeah,
well,
hey, I
might
have to have you on my
show,
man. We chatted up, so yeah, man. Drop me an email, man, and I'll talk to you, and we'll take it from there.
I definitely do that, man. But I'm gonna get this book. I'm gonna see what I can see.
Definitely pick up the book. Definitely for sure. Thank you for calling in. So, any final comment or thought, Richard?
Well, I don't know. You put me on the spot here.
I was just wondering. I mean, you don't have to, because we coming down to the end. But I just want to say it's been a pleasure interviewing you and discussing.
Pleasure talking to you.
This book, and like you said it best, is that this book has stood the test of time. And it looks like it's actually making a resurgence. And I've heard nothing but great things about the book. I haven't heard anybody say anything negative or critical about it.
Well,
everybody has been just
raving. That's because what I said before, what we were interested in was with the people in the book, did they like it? Did they feel it represented them? Do they feel that they were quoted properly from the tapes? It's much more interested in their idea that it was their book. And that I was just being the voice, I was just being the transmitter, the communicator between one culture and another. It's not my book on game, it's their book.
Gotcha. Well, continued success to you, Richard. And again, thank you for joining me tonight. Listeners, join me next week. Next week, this show is going to be for the women. It's going to be for the women. It's about women who have... You know, with men, their thing is erectile dysfunction. Well, some women have libido problems, libido challenges, and we're going to be talking to an expert and therapist in that area that helps women overcome their libido problems. So that will be next Thursday's show. Same time, same place, same bat cave, all that. Enjoy the NFL playoffs this weekend and have a safe and enjoyable weekend. I'll see you next Thursday.